If councillors could be, and members of the public could be seated, please. We need to commence the meeting. A warm welcome to everyone this evening. My name is Paula Eat, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome everybody to the meeting this evening on Monday the 5th of August 2024, and welcome to those in the public gallery and also to those at home who are watching along on YouTube. Being 5:30pm, I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are also live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with council's policy, I will ask the Chief Executive Officer to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Street, and I believe Councillor Richardson has been delayed and will be here very shortly. From our staff this evening, we have our CEO, Mr Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Spee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, Senior Planner, Mr Donovan, Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have no apologies this evening. We're on page one of the agenda, confirmation of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting No. 13, held on the 15th of July 2024, be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Still on page one, workshops held since the last Council meeting. We had a workshop on the 22nd of July in relation to the Kingborough Community Awards. On page two, does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. Declaring an interest relating to item 16.1, disposal of land, Kingborough Sports Precinct. I'm a paid-up member of the Jack Jumpers. I've got season tickets. So does one of my family members. And I'm also a board member of Gymnastics Tasmania. Having received advice previously from the CEO, I am declaring this interest, but I'll remain in the room for the vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
I'd like to declare an interest in FFDAS 2023, item 13, in that I spoke in depth with the residents of the neighbourhood, but I will stay in the room. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, also 16.1, I'm a financial member of the Jack Jumpers, but I'll be staying in the room as well.
Thank you. I'm very jealous that you're all members of the Jack Jumpers, some of you, because I'm not, but thank you for declaring that. It now takes us on. Welcome to Councillor Richardson. We noted that you may be caught in traffic. Takes us now to page two, transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Before I call for questions without notice, I would like to draw attention to those in the public gallery who are here with us this evening in relation to the guidelines for public questions. Under the Local Government Act, we are required to provide at least 15 minutes for public questions. There is to be no discussion, preamble or embellishment of any question that is asked without notice, and the Chair, which is myself, may require that a member of the public immediately put the question. If I could just ask those who are asking questions this evening to bear that in mind and invite anybody to ask a question this evening. And although we know who you are, would you mind, please, for the purpose of the recording, to state your name and your suburb? Thank you. It did come on, Mark. Oh.
Professor Michael Rowan from Birches Bay, and my question is Council aware the three claims concerning the supposed dangers of personal bushfire shelters made by the Tasmanian Fire Service on their website. At the time of Council's prosecution of Wendy Edwards for installing a private bushfire shelter without Council approval, namely, one, that there is no conclusive research or evidence that demonstrates that private bushfire shelters are safe to use, but two, the Victorian Bushfires Royal Commission found, quote, conflicting evidence where seven people died in private bushfire shelters while others claimed the shelter may have saved their lives, and three, the Royal Commission concluded that, quote, extreme caution should be taken with respect to the use of private bushfire shelters. All three of these claims were withdrawn in November of last year, having been shown to be false. Accordingly, does Council now accept that there was no factual basis to the prosecution of Ms Edwards and that the actual findings of the Royal Commission show that the removal of the personal bushfire shelter at our property would constitute a risk to our lives? And therefore, what does Council propose to do about this situation?
Thank you. I'll ask the CEO to provide some assistance.
Thank you, and through you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr Ryan, for the question. So, Council takes professional advice from a variety of sources, and at the time we did draw upon advice that was listed on the TASFIRE website. We take information in good faith from various sources. In terms of its validity or lack thereof, I can't comment to the detail of that. I'm not an expert in that area, but we will continue to take advice from various sources that we deem to be reputable at any moment in time. Any adverse outcome that comes from that is purely incidental and accidental in terms of the outcomes that come alongside it. In terms of the relation to the prosecution of Ms Edwards, we acknowledge the fact that this has been a really difficult journey and quite an emotional one for your family, and we appreciate the challenge alongside that. I would say, though, that the information that was taken from the TASFIRE website was not the sole determinant of that action, and we have a duty as an organisation, as a regulatory body, to uphold, our role in terms of maintaining the standards as it applies to planning.
Do you have a further question?
Quick follow-up question?
Yep.
Given that there was no factual basis to the supposed dangers of private bushfire shelters, on what basis did the Council complete its risk analysis of the installation of the bushfire bunker, and does Council stand by that risk analysis, which, as I understand it, was the evidential basis for the Council progressing in accordance with the Council's enforcement policy of determining that this was a breach of the Building Act which warranted prosecution?
We will take that question on notice because Mr Stewart was not the in the role at the time, so would be unlikely to be aware of that. Although, Ms Tyler-Moore can provide some assistance. Sorry. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor. The matter for prosecution was non-compliance with the Building Act. It didn't take into account the matters that were mentioned in the first question. It was to do with the Building Act and not to do with the Royal Commission.
I understand that, but there is a conceptual confusion here. The Council's enforcement policy says that the action to enforce should be proportionate to the offence, and if there's no factual basis to conclude that there was any problem with the installation, there would seem to be no factual basis for thinking that it was a breach of the Act which warranted prosecution.
Ms Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the consideration was non-compliance with the Building Act, not the other matters that were mentioned tonight.
Again, I ask, this will be the last thing. I'm not wanting to enter into a debate. I know there's other things on your agenda. The Council has an enforcement policy. The enforcement policy does not require the Council to take action in relation to every breach of the Building Act. There is an assessment of the significance of the breach of the Building Act, which, as I understand it, from information I gained under Freedom of Information, employed the false claims of the TFS as a basis for the assessment of the risk of the installation of the bushfire bunker, and without those false claims to back the Council's assessment of it according to its risk register, it would seem to me that there was no basis for Council to assert that the breach of the Building Act was of sufficient consequence to justify prosecution under the Building Act. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll take that as a statement rather than a question. Are there any further questions without notice from the community? Could you please come forward? Thank you.
Good evening. My name's David Grace, for those who don't know. Firstly, can I just say to you, General Manager, sorry I missed the appointment. That was my fault. And if I had have seen you, I wouldn't be up here tonight. But anyway, and also a question I have through you, Mayor, regarding our new General Manager. It seems strange that we've not heard or had any press release on what our new General Manager believes he can do for us in Kingborough. Like previous General Managers that take an office within 100 days have set a target of something they would hope to achieve. I haven't read anything in the Chronicle or the paper on what Mr. Stewart aims to, or where he intends to take us over the period he's employed here.
Is that your question?
Well, that's a question.
Yep. Thank you for the question. I can't recall. I was on council when we employed the previous General Manager. I can't recall at that time that General Manager doing anything in the media, outlining any sort of 100-day plan. Those sorts of things are normally reserved for newly elected premiers, not General Managers or CEOs of council. But suffice to say, the committee was and councillors were very pleased with the suggestions that the now incumbent for the position provided to us during the interview process and the work that he has been undertaking since he commenced in the role about 12 weeks ago. So I don't know whether you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, and thank you for the comment. I'm happy to share where some of my priorities lie for this organisation. So I guess there's a couple of key factors that I'll be focusing on. One is how we increase our level of customer and community centricity in this organisation, so making sure that we're the council that our community want from this organisation. So looking how we can get closer and making sure that organisationally we're achieving the outcomes that our community want. Secondly, I want this to be an organisation that is great for people to work, and so there's a number of things that come into that. We want to be retaining good talent. We want to be making sure that this is a place that people want to come and work. We want to be a competitive environment and making sure that we're providing a really great workplace for our employees. So those two things exist together, and we're working on that. A big underpinning part of that is the culture that we establish within this organisation, and that'll be sort of the underpinning focus that goes alongside those two high-level objectives that I'm looking for.
I thank you for that because, the Mayor, you're privileged to a lot of stuff now that we as ratepayers are not because you people interview the General Manager because that's your role. But we're not aware of what qualifications or what our new General Manager. So I appreciate that Mr. Stewart is listening to that. The other question through you, Mayor, to the General Manager once again. Sir, have you been to Bruny Island yet?
Mr. Stewart.
Through you, Mayor, yes, I have visited Bruny Island and I have another visit booked in, not this week, but next week as well.
Lovely, because that was something that I was going to sit down with you at that meeting that we'd have one-on-one and show you some of the good work that has been done through this council and the group of Bruny Island. Anyway, I've been nice now. I'll get on to the nasty ones, if you don't mind.
Thank you.
yeah, cheers, mate. John Street, can you advise what's the latest regarding the bus stop there on the Channel Highway?
Yes, so we have been actively working with the Department of State Growth and Metro Tasmania and the other bus operator to resolve the final issues with that interchange opening. The Department of State Growth had originally ticked off on our plans for that, and then subsequently there were some concerns about the design of it. They had got a consultant's report, which took quite a while to be received by us, which has held up the process. The consultant's report was finalised at the end of June, and we only received a copy about 10 days ago. The CEO has had a meeting last week with Department of State Growth to progress this, and we hope that that will be operational in the near future.
Mayor, as a ratepayer now, I'm very disappointed in the way that's planned out, because when we sat round the table, we were told as councillors that Metro had met with our design staff, etc., before we actually bought the property to be able to put that bus stop in. That was just a failure, and that's cost the ratepayers tremendous...
Just to clarify that, there at this stage there hasn't been any additional costs that have been incurred with that project, and I would fully defend our staff and the negotiations that they had with the department. I don't accept that there is any blame...
Mayor, I expect you to do that.
There is...
That's quite all right, but I'm just pointing...
Yep, I feel like we're going back in history here. Please don't talk over the top of me while I'm in the chair and you're here as a member of the public asking a question. That is totally inappropriate. But I will defend our staff, because I get very frustrated when people allege that there is all sorts of things that are going on that aren't our fault, and then they lay it clearly on the blame of our staff. And that is grossly unfair for those people who are then unable to defend themselves. Did you have another question?
I have a couple.
Okay, thank you.
My second question to the bus stop is then, Mayor, you made a statement in the press about the infrastructure costs was $400,000 or thereabouts, I understand. What was the total of the cost of that particular bus stop, considering council, I believe, had to purchase a house, demolish, etc., to allow that bus stop to go in?
I don't have that figure off the top of my head. I can't recall it, but we will take that on notice.
You'll
and
take
provide that.
That on notice and,
It has been publicly released prior to this, but I can't recall it at this stage, so I'll take that on notice.
Now, the other thing is, while I'm here... Mayor, when are you going to do something about the stuff here, the community commotion? You can't hear here. You're sitting in here. I know I'm 80 and I'm deaf, but I can't hear. I have no idea what you was talking about, or the general manager. I'm not sure what he was talking about when the other person made his question. This is appalling, because we had a better setup here years ago. With those speakers working, at least we could hear, or the public gallery could hear.
Thank
anyway,
you.
I'll just pass that on.
Thank you very much. I can assure you that we have had some... I wasn't aware that the volume was a problem, but we have had some recent issues with the microphones turning themselves off, and we are addressing that in the near future, looking at getting another system which will enhance the quality, not only of the recordings, but also for people who are here viewing the meeting and also online.
Thank you. My other question is, if you've read in the paper today, and that was another matter I wanted to discuss with the GM, was down at Snug, we're losing our doctor after 45 years. Well, not only our doctor, we're losing the premises. I've made some inquiries regarding their movement to the Margate project at Margate, the Culloth Group's development there. I understand that there's a problem that could take some time to sort out, because of I'm not sure now whether it's something to do with having to put another DA in, because there was office space passed and he couldn't get the office space that he thought the demand was for, so now it's putting in a doctor surgery, which I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, this is only gossip say, that then they will have to put another application in and provide more parking spaces. Now, this doctor's going to be out of town, and these new doctors, I believe, are ready to start. As you know, the Channel's a big area, and we've got the old people's home at Snug, and
yep.
Bruny Islands included. I understand, Mayor, through... I don't believe there's a doctor now even on Bruny Island.
I wasn't aware of the Snug practice closing until I read it in the media this morning, like other people, but I believe the CEO might be able to assist us.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. And through you, thanks for the point around medical services. And we are aware of the significant challenges that exist for our community in terms of getting access to medical appointments, to be able to make sure that they're getting the care that they need. That is not a problem that's isolated just to Kingborough. It exists across the entirety of Tasmania and indeed across the country as well around the affordability and the viability of general practice surgeries. In general, medical services aren't within the remit of local government as a service to provide or play an active role in, but we do have a role in terms of making sure that we're delivering the outcomes for our community, and that includes making sure that we're providing access to medical services. So whilst I'm not aware of the specifics of the case that you're bringing up there, I would be very interested in talking to any medical practitioners that were keen to set up services within Kingborough to understand what it is that they're looking for and any relationships that we can help broker to allow them to establish within this municipal area.
And we will take on notice the part of your question in relation to the planning, because that's not something that I was aware of.
Sorry, but Mr. Gentleman, so maybe you might ring me tomorrow when you get some time and talk to me about the Snug thing, because I'm pretty keen. There are doctors ready to go in there.
Yep.
They're set bang to go in, and we don't want to lose them.
Ms. Tullamore, are you able to assist us?
Yes, through you, Mayor, if I've understood the question correctly. Doctors moving out, new doctors moving in, do they need a new planning permit? If there's an existing established permitted use, a use that has a permit in place, and the same use is going in there, there's no need to get a new planning permit unless they're significantly changing how it's operating. So as an example, if it had approval for two practitioners and they want to put in eight practitioners, then they need to make an amendment because they won't have the parking required. If it's going from two to two, then they get to enjoy the existing approvals that were in place.
Mr. Grace,
I'm going to finish.
This needs to be a question and not a statement. It's not debate time. You're not a member of the council anymore, so I need to treat you treat all the members of the community. And that was that.
Well, my question will be: is where are the 40,000 people going to see a doctor in a year if we can't get Margate open? And I'll leave it at that because I couldn't hear, but I understand and I know the urgency of it, and by looking at our new general manager, he certainly will make sure whatever possible that we can try and get this thing underway. Thank you very much. And I
pose, thank you.
Mayor, I'm sorry if I talk over you, but, you know, that's just me.
I'm sure there's many responses I could give to that, and I won't. Do we have any other questions? Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Mark Donnellan of Huntingfield. The Summerlees Road underpass project is reasonably high profile for a Kingborough Council project, and its closure of Summerlees Road has impacted a lot of people in the community, including people travelling to Kingston High School and the Sports Centre, as well as the surrounding residents. May I start off by asking for a general update to the progress of this project?
Before I hand over to Mr. Smee, I'll just say that there are A number of people in this room who are very well aware of that. I'm one of the residents who lives nearby and is travelling that road and increased traffic, and we have a couple of other staff who are in that area, and I do make a plea for motorists to stick to the 40-kilometre speed that we've had to put in place for Whitewater Crescent in particular, because there are cars parked on the sides and people aren't adhering to the speed limit, and school buses are taking that route, and it can be a little alarming to see people continuing to barrel along there at 50 kilometres an hour. So Mr Smee should be able to help us, though.
Through you, Mayor, the project is on track to be completed within the times that we advertised.
Good news. Thank you. Was a study on the impact to platypus in the creek completed, and did the results have any impact on the construction of the underpass?
Mr Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, a study was completed. It didn't have any impact on the design of the facility, no.
Great. You already answered my third question, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions? No? Thank you very much. We'll move on. Takes us to questions on notice from the public. There was one in relation to the bushfire bunker from Mr Rowan, with a response from Mr Stewart. And if members of the community would like to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some questions that follow on from the Southern Tasmania Regional Land Use Stralis State of Play report from the previous council meeting, if I may, that haven't been answered. So I have had several conversations in the past couple of weeks with people in the community about this, and I just need some feedback about fears or concerns, if I may. Many in the community believe the scenic protection area overlay has been applied arbitrarily, not my opinion but theirs, arbitrarily to justify downstream application of landscape conservation zoning. Could I get a comment from council officers about that, how arbitrary it was, and if not, the methodology used?
Ms Tullamore, are you able to assist us? We don't have our strategic planner with
us
here this evening, but if Ms Tullamore isn't able to answer it, then we can take it on notice.
Understood.
Through you, Mayor, the scenic landscape overlay in the landscape conservation zone doesn't have any bearing in the Stralis. The state of play is to do strategic planning and land uses in the broader area of southern Tasmania. There's three for the state, and those two elements are not part of the Stralis.
Thank you. How can the community know that there's clear justification for its implementation, that is the scenic protection area overlay application?
Ms Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, when the planning scheme, so I suspect the person who's asked via you is actually asking about the planning scheme.
Yes.
The Tasmanian planning scheme.
Yes.
The Tasmanian planning scheme has been written by the state government, and the overlay codes and the zones are also written by the state government. The requirement for councillors to then apply those new provisions to the planning scheme relevant to their municipality. So the rules for which they are applied are included in the information that is that supports the Tasmanian planning scheme. And when each council applies them to their areas, they have to do a justification report, and there'll be a table as part of the supporting report that explains how it's been applied and what methodology. The scenic landscape overlay in Kingborough, we already had one. It's a similar one, but it's actually quite different. So people need to be careful not to think just because it's got the same name, although the name is actually different, but other ones are slightly different. There can be fundamental changes in what's allowed or how it's applied. So, for example, in the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme, which is the scheme we currently work under, they had applied it by a contour level. That's not the same approach for this one. This talks more about corridors and view sight lines and so forth. There's a whole lot of studies that go into that and an overall landscape. So it's important with those particular ones that you're not just looking micro at a single property, you're looking at a whole area. So as an example, it's dark now, obviously you can't see outside, but it's a good example of where you can see multiple properties on the hills behind Kingston, or certainly when you come down from the outlet or other vantage points, that it's about looking across a whole landscape and how it works together and how that's applied, rather than just getting caught up on single ones. So yes, there is methodology, it's included in the supporting report, and there are rules that have to be abided by that the state government has applied.
Thank you. So it's fair to say the TPC will adjudicate its fairness in its application and can make changes.
Through you, Mayor, yes, the TPC will make the ultimate decision. So part of the process for the public is that the draft scheme, which includes the new maps, where the zones will be applied and the codes will be applied, will go to public exhibition. It goes on exhibition for a period of 60 days. We will hold information sessions with people so they can come and ask questions and understand how it might affect their property or what the particular overlays or codes mean. And if they feel that they wish to make a submission, they can do it in support. Yes, I like what's been applied to my property in my area. I want to see that stay. Or they may say the opposite. I don't like that. I think it's more appropriate that it's this. Or I don't think it should be applied to that particular area. And they just need to give some reasons. They're not required to get a consultant to write that. They're not expected to write it as if they're a qualified planner. It's set up for the layperson to be able to bank those submissions. And then when it goes to the hearings, the TPC will hold public hearings. You get to speak if you've made a submission. If you haven't made a submission, whether that's for or against, you don't get to speak. There is some opportunity to be joined as party later, but it complicates things. So even if you are in support, you need to be mindful that somebody else might make a submission that flips what's being applied to your area or to the property next to you or to your precinct or however you wish to consider your area. And then the TPC will obviously make the decision as to whether these zones and overlays were applied correctly. And then from the submissions and any submissions from council, because we must read all the submissions and make comments, and you know, we might come out and say, well, actually, no, yeah, the residents of blah area are right. We also agree that should change to this zone or should have this overlay, so we'll put that submission in. The TPC considers all that and can direct for changes to occur.
Thank you. And that last explanation answers my last question, so that's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Any further questions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question regarding the coastal policy, and I thank staff for sending through the submission this afternoon. I guess, what do we understand now, like the process for this to be, and our understanding of why, I guess, government didn't go through a proper standard amendment process following sort of planning guidelines?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. Can't comment as to the decision making by the state government around their engagement process or process to put forward the bill. Do you mind repeating your first question again? Sorry, Councillor Ridgely.
That's okay. So just, I guess, yeah, what do we understand the process now? We put the submission in, but what do we understand the process then to be?
There was limited information provided by the state government. My understanding of the process is that they will collect the submissions for review and consideration and potentially consider that in a redraft of the bill, and then it will be put forward for voting.
Thank you. And a further question, Mayor, perhaps you might be able to answer this one, regarding LGAT. I'm just wondering at all, did LGAT at all, do you know, if they did question the government in regards to why it didn't follow a standard amendment process and go through the Planning Commission kind of guidelines? Did LGAT at all ask that question or lobby the government or advocate for proper process to be?
I can't recall it on this issue, but I can check and get back to you if you can leave that one with me. Further questions? Councillor Fox.
For the sake of the community and the fact that we only received the submission late this afternoon, would it be possible for our staff to briefly describe what Council's submission has been, point by point, for the community's edification?
Yep.
Through you, Mayor, yes, I can summarise the points made, if that would be of assistance. Do you mind if I just get up the points made so I'm...
I would love that, thank you.
So Council's submission was fairly brief, and we met internally with relevant staff from planning and our environment department, and we determined that our submission should be limited to how it will potentially impact Kingborough and the way that we are assessing development on our in our coastal areas. So, in summary, Council's submission was that we value meaningful engagement and that the limited time frame and supporting information provided constrains this process. In consideration of the transition to the new planning scheme and state planning provisions and changing pressures facing coastal development from the impacts of climate change, Council would welcome a broad review of the state coastal policy. Any review should not assume changes to the policy on the basis of the temporary validation bill and should be accompanied by a robust engagement process. We would welcome improved clarification of the meaning of a range of terms, in particular what constitutes actively mobile landforms, as well as a gap analysis against TPS codes relating to coastal areas. Council would like to clarify that the validation bill will only apply retrospectively to works that have a valid LUPA permit during the validation period and not to works that have occurred illegally during this period or future works which have not obtained a LUPA permit in the validation period. So that's the summary of our submissions.
Councillor Fox, anything further?
Yeah, I guess it's very difficult for us in the time frame that we've had to consider this issue and haven't been able to bring the matter to Council with a full report. So I really appreciate you reading the actual summary from our staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Just to follow up on that, so that submission is being submitted on behalf of Council, but am I right in that just because of the turnaround it's not going to be, I suppose, signed off by Council Laws?
That's correct.
Yep, true. First question for me, just around residents will have noticed at the intersection of Browns Road and Channel Highway that some land is being cleared where Browns River is. I just wanted to know if we could have some information on the record for what that is around and what the development potentially that is happening there.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. I don't have all the detail of previous approvals on that site. There are previous approvals on that site. We are aware of the vegetation removal and the other works that have occurred, and our compliance and investigations officer has gone down and started the investigation on that matter.
Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. And then just a couple of questions around the news. It's been about 6 weeks now that Blackmans Bay South Beach has been closed. So just for the record for the community, there was a media release put out by you, Mayor, I believe, at the time. But could I just have clarification of what that is looking like heading into next summer or even now for recreational swimmers at the Blackmans Bay Beach?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Mayor. The no swim advisory in place at the moment is, as it sounds, it's a no swim advisory due to potential public health risk. At this stage, foresee that it will remain in place for the next swimming season. We are working internally and in partnership with TasWater to determine what the strategy will be to address the issue there, and that will be considering our legal obligations, risk and community expectations as well.
And I'll just add to that that our staff have been working incredibly hard to try and determine the source of the contamination, and there has been, it's fair to say, probably a bit of conjecture on social media about the possible causes of the contamination, and there have been people suggesting it's been the seagulls, a whole range of things have been suggested, and all the investigations to date cannot find the exact source of it. So it is a great source of frustration for our staff, because they have put an incredible amount of time into it, but they've also been working very closely with TasWater and the Derwent Estuary Program to try and resolve it. So there's a very cooperative approach, and hopefully in the, you know, in the future that will bear some fruit and we can actually get to the source of it. But as you can appreciate, with the size of the stormwater network in Latmans Bay, that's not necessarily easy to pinpoint exactly where it's coming from.
Yeah, thanks. So just to clarify then, so staff or the council is putting together a plan for that specific part so that there will be hopefully substantial, I suppose, upgrades put forward or proposed to actually improve the water quality.
Ms. Shikuti.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, we are putting together the strategy. The strategy will look at costs and benefits and ongoing risks. I suppose underpinning the strategy is determining the source of the pollution and the issue. So that will be a key priority as part of that strategy that will then inform our decision-making from there.
In short, we want to fix it. We just have to find out what it is first, what's broken, so we can fix it.
And I totally appreciate that. It just came up to in discussion, and I went back and had a look, you know, Google, and it pretty much comes up every year, you know, some issue, whether it's a temporary, we had the floods in 2018, and so staff have been working on it for a significant period. It just feels like it's a real, you know, it's obviously hugely disappointing for that particular part of the community that use that more sheltered part of Blackmans Bay, but it just feels like we're not really getting anywhere, and the discussions I'm having with people to say it just feels like year in, year out, and now to have it downgraded as poor. But it's great to hear that a strategy is being put in place so that we can have actual options. Authorises councillors.
And we will provide a workshop opportunity for councillors once that has been prepared, so that you can be aware not only of the work that's been done to date, but then, you know, what the strategy entails. And once we've got that, we will obviously communicate that to the community.
Yep. And just to make the comment that we've, as councillors, had a substantial amount of information presented to us on the issue, but I just wanted to add that for the public record.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just had a question around the Algarna Road Channel Highway roundabout upgrade project that State Growth are doing. Their website's advising that the detailed designs have been completed and will be shared with the community in July 2024. Just wondering, has Council received the final designs yet?
Mr. Reeve, what do I feel like the words imminent might come out?
Through you, Mayor, unlikely. No, I haven't heard too much more. We've certainly had lots of discussions with State Growth in terms of the design and different aspects of it, if you like, but I haven't heard any more about that aspect of it, but happy to chase up with them to see whether or not that time frame's moved out slightly.
I suspect it has, because I think there was... I know from speaking to our local member, Julie Collins, she was concerned about... given that there's a significant amount of federal funding in that project, she was concerned about the time lag that was occurring with the Department of State Growth. Any further questions? If not, we'll continue with the agenda. Takes us to page 3, questions on notice from councillors. We had 2, the first one from Councillor Cordova in relation to paid parking enforcement on private properties with a response from Mr Basham, and the second one from Councillor Antoli with a response from Mr Stander in relation to Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy State of Play report. So open session of council now adjourns at 6:14 p.m. and planning authority commences at 6:14 p.m. Takes us to page 5, DAS 2023-13, development application for subdivision creating 10 lots plus balance and 3 public open space lots at Tinderbox Proprietary Limited, 441 Tinderbox Road, Tinderbox, with a recommendation on page 42. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Gladright. Seconder, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. Yes, as you said, this proposal is for a subdivision.
You might need to speak up because we've got indications from the back that it's difficult to hear this evening.
Sure. So the proposal is for a subdivision creating 10 lots plus balance and 3 public open space lots. The recommendation is for approval with 17 conditions and 5 advice clauses. There were 8 representations, and in the last couple of days I've received further emails raising some other concerns, these being privacy and wastewater. My reading of the report, I feel like these things have been adequately addressed. The lot sizes are quite large. They are, like, the smallest is no less than a hectare, which is 2.5 acres. So I consider that privacy would adequately be able to be accommodated on that lot size. Same with the wastewater. I feel like that has been answered quite well in the report. I think that the public open space really has been considered quite well as well, and I think that this subdivision will open up a really beautiful part of our municipality and is remaining sensitive to the surrounds, so I am happy to support the application.
Thank you. Next I've got Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to acknowledge the detail in this report. It's not often when we get a DA that I have to read it quite a few times, as it was highly complex with different zones that we were looking at. So I really thank staff, the authors of the report, for the time taken to do this, and also for time actually taken to meet with me prior to council to have some questions. Overall, as Councillor Gladright said, I do feel it's a very positive outcome for environmental protection and the public open space outcomes. But I also really want to note that it is a really interesting piece of land. There's a lot of high conservation importance on this land. Acknowledging the local community members who've lived here for long times and the value of this land and the fact that, you know, we need to protect biodiversity right now, you know, more than ever. So I've got quite a few questions in regards to that, and I have had discussions with staff that the our environmental team and a whole range of other planning staff across council have really looked at this and worked with the developer for the best possible outcome. So a couple of questions, I've got quite a few, about 10. So if I can please have an explanation around the public open space, noting that it is on the foreshore, so considering, I guess, the tides on that foreshore, I guess staff in our tracks and trails or other areas, like who has been involved, I guess, in checking the appropriateness of this public open space, and that it isn't sort of a bit of a, oh yeah, you can have this bit. Like, what value is that, is this public open space to council and the community, I guess?
Ms Tullamore or Mr Donovan, either one.
Through you, Mayor, a significant amount of work has gone into seeing the appropriateness of the public open space. Whenever we have an application, we need to consider, in accordance with the policy, because it's now the revised one has some criteria, that we don't want land that we can't use or is not of use to the community. This site was walked over twice by multiple departments within council to make sure that it was appropriate. rather than just a desktop view to see, oh yes, we'll just take this part. So they walked through to see where it's appropriate, and there were changes that resulted from that, such as widening some parts where they knew that it would be more vulnerable to the coastal impacts of natural processes occurring along there, and dealing with the land type that is along there. So it was involved the tracks and trails team, environmental planners, and then the NAB team, the Natural Areas and Biodiversity team as well, to ensure that it was appropriate for use in the future and wasn't going to cause a liability to council with respect to it failing or not being appropriate or too dangerous.
Thank you. And in that, we considered the tidal and the Crown land impacts on that as well. Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, yes, there are Crown land holdings that adjoin these lots, so yes, that was considered as part of it, and the tidal impacts was also considered in terms of its erosion and stability.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So I guess, as noted in the report, like there was an earlier approved subdivision in 2004 and then was one put forward that sort of wasn't approved. Can I just have a bit of history kind of background in regards to those approvals and non-approvals, please?
Mr. Donovan.
Yep, through you, Mayor. Thank you. Yes, you're quite right. There was an application in 2004 for a part of the site, and the plans show it on the western side, and it's got a little notation there about that. Application was made in 2004 to do six lots there and a public open space on the foreshore. Council did not support that because they thought that was too many lots and had too large an impact. What Council did approve was what you see on the plan. It was a two-lot subdivision with the public open space. So that was what Council ended up approving after some discussion and an appeal. The application to subdivide those two lots has commenced, but it hasn't been completed. So that's why the application before you has it in detail, so that the current site still includes that land unsubdivided. They have commenced, and they have advised they will complete, but we've taken that into account in the permit, and we've imposed some options in their conditions to cover that if it doesn't or doesn't occur.
Councillor Midgley.
Great, thank you. In regards to the blocks, one of those 10 blocks, I guess, are we registering the building envelopes to check that there's further protection if there is, you know, if people decide to build on those blocks? What are we doing in regards to that?
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, there are conditions in the report about that matter. All the blocks will be required to be covered by a variety of covenants, and they include a defined building area. Those building areas have been determined on a couple of factors, mainly their bushfire management and also the biodiversity values on or around those blocks. So they will all have a covenant that defines a building area, yes.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Page 17, there's a note that says, while there are also natural values on other parts of the subject land, primarily lots 9 and 10 and the land subject to DA 2047, this land is outside the environmental living zone part of the site and is not subject to clause 14.5.1. Can you just explain those different zones, please, and that protection there?
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you. Yes, the land does have three zones, as was introduced. It's got the northern area, which is in the environmental living zone. It's got the southern two lots, 9 and 10, and there it's in the rural resource zone. And there's a portion of environmental management zone to the west. So what's referred to there is in relation to the environmental living zone, the scheme does allow us to look at a variety of mechanisms to protect and preserve land, including the Part 5s and the covenants. That's part of the outcomes that the scheme tries to achieve if you're going to subdivide that land. Those provisions and requirements are not in the other zones, particularly in the environmental resource zone. So it's more of a typical zone where it has a defined lot size and a few other parameters around your house site, but it doesn't have the same criteria that we have to scrutinise the environmental living land with. So it gives council, I guess, less opportunities to achieve other outcomes in that zone that we can achieve in the environmental living zone.
Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge the number of representations also, and noting as well there's a lot of questions in regards to that environmental protection and the natural values report. On page 38, there was a comment regarding a question around the protection of the wedge-tailed eagles, and that a condition is recommended for inclusion in any permit issued requiring a covenant on the title to ensure any future buildings and access are outside the 500 metre buffer. So noting, and thanks to staff for that prompt on that, that it was in condition 15, I guess we wouldn't be seeing many of these sort of things come to council in regards to sort of conditions, and it's quite unique. I guess in regards to developing these conditions to ensuring that there is protection for the endangered wedge-tailed eagles, how did we kind of put these, I guess, conditions together? Did we work with our environmental team and that sort of thing?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we do have a suite of some standard conditions, which are the ones that we commonly see on the applications. These ones that are really specific do take a lot of work and are drafted by staff. They obviously have their own professional ability to do that, but it's always looked in reference to the reports that accompany the applications. So there are environmental consultants involved in this application on behalf of the applicant, and looking at some of the detail and the research that they did, it's referenced back, and often there can be conversations with those various consultants to make sure that the right outcome is going to occur on that. So yeah, condition 15 does include a lot of detail that's very specific to this particular parcel of land and this application.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I guess, again, the complexity of this one is in regards to the Part 5 agreement and the covenant. Could staff please explain how they ensure protection and, I guess, the differences between the covenants and the Part 5 agreement?
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you. There are requirements for both Part 5 on the balanced land and also for covenants over all the lots. The difference is that the Part 5 is a binding agreement and runs with the land, and all landowners in the future would be bound by that. The Part 5 has its own provisions in relation to a range of matters dealing with land management, including maintenance, improvements and other restrictions, including firewood collection, to try and preserve the land and maintain it and enhance it. The covenants are are on the title as well, but they're a different document. And the covenants relate to the title as well, but they are about more specific matters, as you can see in the report, dealing with a house site or dealing with how you do your windows to assist bird strike, to prevent bird strike, not assist it. There is a difference. The Part 5, as I said before, is a mechanism we use through the environmental living zone quite successfully in terms of how we achieve these matters as an ongoing issue. And it's also designed that it also says you cannot further subdivide the land either. So it tends to hold the land as it is and seeks to maintain and improve it.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley. Thank you. So I guess what I'm sort of hearing as well is that the developer has really tried to protect the natural values of the land through this Part 5 agreement, and have worked with the council with that. And when you can see in the images, you can see that the blocks that they are subdividing, I guess, don't have the natural values. Is that correct? As they do in that, the big parcel of land that they're protecting. Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, you're right. The apart from the what's called the balanced block, which is just a large block that's left over, the other smaller blocks in the environmental living zone have been located and designed around the areas that were already cleared. So that was one factor that we thought was the reason why they were supported. By doing that and achieving a yield which the scheme says can be achieved, the large balance area was able to be kept as it is and untouched. Yeah.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
So what is the process for implementing the Part 5 agreement? I guess if, say, this developer put this, the application gets approved and then they choose then to sell it on, with the approved blocks and things like that, how can we ensure in the future that what is that process for the Part 5 agreement, and how can we ensure absolute 100% protection for these really important conservation values for the future? Mr. Donovan.
The approval requires the Part 5 to be done first. So once they have a permit and before they can create the blocks, the first thing they have to do is create the Part 5 and the covenants on a title. It is staged, but that Part 5 will be in existence from day one. So if they want us on sell, and that's their right, then the person who buys it is also obliged to uphold the Part 5.
Yeah. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I note in some of the representations questions they asked why Council didn't look at a conservation covenant. If I could just get some explanation regarding that. I know the response is there, but it's always good to hear it on record.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the conservation covenants are great for their purpose, but under Land Use Planning and Approvals Act, Part 5 agreements are stronger because Council is then a party. Conservation covenants then means that Council's not a party to that and then can't undertake the enforcement or matters to do with that. So it's also not very well referenced through LUPA, so it doesn't have as much power. So we prefer to use Part 5 agreements, but essentially it's got the same effect in that it has the ability to protect those natural areas. There's nothing to say that the owners of that land wouldn't prevent them going and put a conservation covenant on top of it if they wanted to. It probably wouldn't really serve a purpose, but it doesn't prevent them doing that.
Thank you. And just one further question, sure. Mayor. Just in regards to that email we did receive this afternoon, sorry, it was in regards to the wastewater. And sorry, I can't actually find the question there, so it's not right in front of me, but I'll leave that one and maybe someone else might ask that one. Yeah, unless.
Thank you. Next on my list, I had Councillor Fox.
Councillor Midgley, I appreciate your questions because you've gone into great detail and it's been a very complex report for us to read over the weekend and absorb all the representations. And I guess the last point that you made is the one I'm most concerned about. The blocks 1 and 2 in the report are both 1.37 and 1.25 hectares respectively. But I'm concerned that they are possibly going to have an impact on the downhill properties that are existing, number 461 particularly and 451, because I feel that having a rural environmental living zone, having appreciated that for a long time, the residents are well aware of the local climate and the local soil condition. And in the last winter, there was some heavy rains recorded in this area, and there was quite a lot of runoff that went down the proposed access to this area. And I'm concerned that that is going to be a problem if there are AWTS systems, which we are advocating in this report, which means that the sewage water has to be sprayed over the property and has to be naturally dispersed. Having heavy clay soils in this heavily washed through environment from two properties, I think, may well cause problems. If there was one property only with a house that's situated well back on the site, perhaps that might not cause problems. And I appreciate that our environmental health officer has deemed that both of those properties could maintain the AWTS systems. But I'm concerned that the reality might not be what one would hope for. And I was wondering whether it would be possible to have an amendment to the motion that combines properties 1 and 2 into one block. Further to the fact that we've got possible contamination for the existing residents, there is also a clause, a performance criteria, P2, which means that there any subdivision in a environmental living zone should prevent unreasonable adverse impacts on residential amenity on adjoining lots. It's not just the runoff, but it's also the overlooking and loss of privacy of existing houses who have also cleared their blocks and who are conscious of fire issues and also don't want to be overlooked. It's part of the environmental living that one wants to have privacy, one doesn't want to have any visual impacts from the neighbours, and vice versa. And having these properties 1 and 2 above them, they're going to be doubly impacted because they're looking down on the properties as well as into their properties, as well as possibly having a visual effect with the bulk of their houses quite close and to the property, that the setback of number 1 particularly is quite close to property number 461. And I'd appreciate any comments from the staff in this regard, but I would be, if anyone supports me, prepared to consider an amendment.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, thank you for the questions. I appreciate that residents in open areas, it's hard to face new development that may occur in the area or near to them, and the thoughts of impacts on their amenity. We need to consider the provisions of the planning scheme. In the first instance, we need to be mindful of these applications for subdivision, not for development. The development will come later as separate applications, but I appreciate the thought, well, if you allow the subdivision, then the development will come. But matters of overlooking and the like are dealt with under the development application, not the subdivision. The setbacks are stipulated in the scheme of what they should be, and if they don't meet those setbacks, then they will need a discretionary permit, which there will be an opportunity for your representation. When considering what is overlooking, the planning scheme is not likely to support that it's an issue when the setback is probably close to 60 metres from those houses. Yes, of course, you can always see such a distance. That's why we enjoy views, because you can see so far down a hill or to a distance. But the planning scheme would not consider that as overlooking of private open space. So it probably wouldn't have a lot of strength in a representation concern about that. In instances where the setback is smaller for the development, then conditions can be applied where we require landscaping to be incorporated to soften the appearance of built form. But again, this is a subdivision application only, so it wouldn't be reasonable to have that condition on there. Insofar as the soil conditions and the drainage, they're all dealt with under the building permit, under the Building Act as well. They're required to do soil tests and check suitability, and also for their they need their plumbing permits for the on-site wastewater, which looks at soil types and dispersion areas and treatments and setbacks from boundaries, so that it's all contained on-site. I appreciate there's many areas, including in our municipality, of failing wastewater systems, but they tend to be the older style wastewater systems. The modern ones now have a lot more rigour and regulation around them, and they must do maintenance and ongoing reporting of those on-site wastewater to ensure that they are compliant. And certainly if there's non-compliance, then we have the ability to follow that up. So they are designed to be stay within the site. The drainage must be dealt with within the site, and certainly with the internal road that occurs as well, we'll deal with some of the drainage. So I don't think there is a lot of justification to combine lots 1 and 2 to deal with the matters that have been raised. And they have been addressed in the report and the submissions. Obviously, that was a late submission made outside the representation period, but we had already considered lots of those points in the assessment of the application.
Are there any further discussions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I really appreciate both Councillor Fox and Councillor Midgley. Councillor Midgley, for going into all that detail. It's really important. The Tinderbox Peninsula is an incredibly important area for, obviously, biodiversity, but also natural and cultural heritage. And I think when we do make assessments under the planning scheme, we have to be really cognizant of a site-specific measure. You know, the planning scheme was introduced in such a way that I often lament about its lack of environmental protection and lack of cultural heritage protection, but that's why it's so important that around this table we assess things in a site-specific way and take our time to really deliberate the matters accordingly. So on that issue, just briefly about the aerated wastewater treatment system and the condition 14 on page 48 that says they can have an AWTS or, quote, an alternative treatment system capable of treating effluent to a secondary standard, yada yada. So when we're talking about these secondary treatment systems, my question is, what is, do such alternatives exist? If they do exist, what, so basically council's saying, oh, we will, might accept an alternative. So my question, my first question is, if the proponents choose an alternative, under what measurement is council going to say whether that's satisfactory or not? And correct me if this is just a question for the building permit stage and not for the subdivision application stage. I accept that. But that's my first question, if that made any sense at all.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, as the lot sizes are large enough and don't meet the other requirements that we've dealt with under building, I'm not an environmental health officer to tell you the types of systems that are alternatives to the AWTS. So, but there are other systems that would be subject to assessment and be dealt with under the plumbing permit, which is under the Building Act 2016, and there's Australian standards that still need to be met to comply with those. So it at least leaves it open for some consideration of other systems that exist, and obviously technologies are changing, so occasionally there are products that come that are appropriate and meet the Australian standards, but it would be assessed at the time.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense. So hopefully that as the technology improves, we still have a catch-all there, but also, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So obviously this area, high biodiversity value, eucalypt, forest, woodlands, providing habitat for endangered and vulnerable species, and this proposed site is acknowledged to contain areas of suitable habitat for devils, pinwheel snail, eastern quoll, which, white-bellied seagull, eastern barred bandicoot, masked owl. I don't want to relitigate a lot of the detail that Councillor Midgley has already covered, but of those areas that aren't covered by the public open space or the Part 5, what are the potential values that are not being protected under this proposal? There are areas that aren't being protected, so can you take us through what is there that isn't going to fall under the protection of the Part 5 or the covenants?
Mr. Donovan.
Tough question. Tough question because you don't know what you don't know. The covenants, for example, try to do some of that in terms of defining the areas to build on, which would limit the impact on those sites to the building areas and the bushfire management areas. We have looked at all the land and tried to evaluate all the land in terms of its values, both for fauna and flora. And where known values exist, have tried to look after those. If you've been down there, you'll know that quite a large area of lots 9 and 10 are cleared in grassland and vineyards and other things. So they're disturbed. They don't have a lot of values per se, although the coastal areas would, and that's why we've got the open space there. So we've tried, I guess, to identify where those other values are, whatever they may be, and try and limit the impact on those lots 1 to 8 and to just those their own little small areas to build on. That's, I guess, what all we could do in terms of the scheme and its overlays and requirements to look after those other values and those other lands.
Thank you.
Cordover.
I'm particularly concerned around the wedge-tailed eagles that are, according to a representative, that they're regularly spotted on lots 1, 2 and 3. And I note condition 15B on page 48 says, quote, not to undertake or locate any building structures or access unless located entirely outside the 500-metre nest buffer and 1 kilometre line of sight buffer from known wedge-tailed eagle nests. Can you take us through what was the assessment process undertaken in order to make that determination and determine that this is indeed an accurate assessment of that site? Basically, I'm asking what was the environmental assessment process to, you know, locate the nests and what rigour did that have? And then further to that question, what rigour will we be as a council enforcing that these disturbance buffers are not impinged upon?
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor, thank you. So the rigour has been partly answered before from Ms. Moore. Our environmental planners and the applicant's consultants have looked at this issue at great detail and have ground-truthed it. So a lot of investigation has gone into that. So in terms of the requirements, that the nest site and the flight paths are known and we've actually designed those lots around that and placed those building areas outside. This condition further restricts further activity on the site to avoiding those areas on those lots. So I guess that's the rigour around that approach. Based on the research that was done by the consultants, which we've ground-truthed, is how we've reached those conclusions and conditions.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
My next issue that I'd like to raise is that around a couple of issues in the council officer's response did, for example, here's one, quote, council appreciates that public open space connecting Tinderbox Beach to Tinderbox Hills has merit. However, acquiring this land as part of the application is beyond the public open space requirements for this subdivision, as is acquiring this land as Crown land. And then there's another point further on where it says council appreciates that the concept of the balanced lot being a public reserve has merit. However, acquiring this public land as part of the application is beyond the open space requirements for this subdivision. My question is, have discussions taken place with the proponents to try and get maximum benefit for the community in terms of public open space connections and environmental protection? I'm trying to tease out what work has been done to try and compromise and find a maximum community benefit, if that question makes sense.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the reference to that it's beyond what public open space can be, contribution can be, is because it's limited by the Act, that it's a maximum of 5%. So the land that's in the coastal areas that is more consistent with the tracks and trails proposal and strategy that's been approved by council has taken up that space. The other informal tracks that have occurred on site are actually people trespassing on the land. And that often happens on really large land parcels, and people get used to it and they think they're public paths and they're not. So that matter isn't a planning matter that we look at. We appreciate that people want to keep what exists, but there was not seen under the tracks and trails strategy or the public open space contribution and connecting different areas and the natural values that will be protected through the areas that are being preserved the other ones didn't outweigh the ones that are put on the plan as being there. That's not to say that the landowner or future landowners don't have a desire to gift that to council or sell that to council. It's something that council, outside planning, could consider whether they wanted to do that. But under the planning permit, it would exceed the requirement and there's no obligation for them to provide that. And we didn't think that that outweighed the value of the coastal frontage open space that's being acquired.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I'm not going to deal with the traffic impact assessment side of things because I just note it, I'm noting it, and I think that I'm satisfied by what's in the report with respect to traffic and the road. My questions were around the subdivision, so this is E15.8.1 and E16.8.1, which is medium and high inundation hazard areas and subdivision in coastal erosion hazard areas. Can you please explain to me what are the protections that are put in place around... Basically, the answer that I heard before is that the lot sizes are sufficient, that stormwater and the wastewater isn't hopefully going to be a problem, but in terms of stormwater and coastal erosion... I'm just trying to understand why it's determined in this report that that's not a problem.
Mr. Donovan, maybe? Could you give us a page reference that you're on, Councillor Cordova?
Sure. I was just looking at the table the non-compliance table at the end. So I'm looking at somewhere like
page 18.
Oh, here we are. I was just looking at page 69.
Page 69. Page 69. Who's going to assist us?
So it just said that it has to be assessed against the performance criteria. So I'm thinking about coastal erosion and I'm thinking about inundation hazard areas.
Mr. Donovan.
I was just trying to understand the question. Through you, Mayor. Thank you. So the Inundation Prone Areas Code 15 and the coastal erosion hazard code 16, what's being referred to. So the application was supported by engineering reports that showed the hydrology and calculated a range of events, including storm surge and the impact of weather and climate. So we've designed the public open space around the coast with that with that knowledge as well. So as we've heard before, we've tried to, where we have achieved that area of sufficient width to be robust and to look after those impacts. I'm not sure if you're asking about further impacts from other stormwater from perhaps the new lots and how that's handled, but maybe it's a more general question about that coastal area.
Correct. So if I can clarify through you, Mayor, it's basically a general question that I think will actually have to be determined by a development application, in a development application process rather than a subdivision application process. Because I'm just trying to predict, will there be any additional coastal erosion or additional... obviously, when you build stuff on properties, there are flow-on effects at other properties further downstream. So I'm just trying to have a crystal ball about that.
Mr. Donovan.
Thank you, through Mayor. That did clarify it. And you're quite right. The subdivision has very few works, and they're only in relation to new access driveways. And the road stormwater system will handle those, and it'll go where that stormwater goes now and be treated, whatever that treatment system is. New developments would be required to go through our stormwater code, and you're quite right. The on-site stormwater then would occur. And new development, particularly houses and sheds, would be have to have the required on-site stormwater treatment systems, which is usually some sort of storage, and then discharge across the land. So that would be done at the application stage for either planning approval if required and or the building and plumbing stage.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. I'll reach my concluding remarks shortly. Environmental protection here is obviously the utmost... It's of utmost significance for all of Lutruwita, Tasmania, but particularly in the Tinderbox Peninsula area, it's a critical thing that we need to, I guess, face a higher set of standards and a greater degree of scrutiny. Obviously, that's balanced against the provisions of the planning scheme, which, as I mentioned at the top, kind of fall short in many areas with respect to environmental and cultural heritage protection. In this case, I'm going to be very interested to hear what other councillors say on it. But I am provided some degree of comfort, particularly around the Part 5 agreements. And I think it's really important, although not a subdivision application matter, for Council to play a really positive and contributing role in working with landowners to try and maximise community benefit from areas of high conservation value, high biodiversity value and high cultural heritage protection value. So working in a positive and collaborative way with landowners to say, well, you know, how do we enhance the natural and cultural value of this area, and how do we maintain and protect it, and how do we, where appropriate, share that with the community? So I think we just need to be sensitive to that, and I'll look forward to hearing from other councillors. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Gladright, did you want to sum up? I'm going to put the recommendation there now, moved by Councillor Gladright, seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. That means that the planning session, the planning authority now adjourns and open session of council recommences at 6:53 p.m. Takes us to page 72, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, there are no petitions that had been received. Still on page 72, disposal of land, Kingborough Sports Precinct, with a recommendation on page 75, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Got a mover in Councillor Dean and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Dean.
Look, happy to support the motion as read. Obviously, there's a few key points here which the report does a pretty good job of highlighting, but what... In essence, we here discuss is that we're looking to dispose land within the sports precinct for the development of the Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre. The crux of the matter, I think, as points out in the report, is that it is in relation to that the land is currently being used by the Hobart Remote Control Car Club, and it has been deemed in the report and within council to date that the use that will be coming from the High Performance Centre, the benefit outweighs of what is currently being used, although the main point that we need to highlight here is that Council has agreed to working with the club to finding alternative arrangements so that they can continue, whether that's in the municipality or not, their practice as a club. So apart from that, I think I'd just like to make the comment that it's an exciting opportunity for us as a municipality, and I really hope that now, if this is passed tonight, that we can expedite the process for the construction of the High Performance Centre as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Gladrott.
Thank you. I have a number of questions, please, that are relating to reversionary clauses, if I may. What conditions will be stipulated in regards to reversionary clauses?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, in essence, a reversionary clause indicates that if the land is not going to be used for the purpose in which Council agrees to transfer it, its ownership does revert back to Council. That process involves recording a notation on title. That notation on title is a publicly available and constant record of that particular clause in relation to the transfer of the land, and obviously would be drafted with appropriate legal advice to ensure that it's watertight.
Thank you. So what is determined as no longer used for jack jumpers? Could this be avoided by hosting a once-a-year group training session, for example?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I think the recommendation is fairly clear on this. It's in relation to it being used as a high-performance training centre by the Tasmanian jack jumpers. Now, a high-performance training centre is something that is used on a regular basis for a team that is competing in high-level basketball. So a one-off use wouldn't constitute a continuation of that particular use.
If no longer used for jack jumpers, could it be used for other purposes without Kingborough Council consent? And if consent is needed, will Kingborough Council consult with community or make the decisions themselves?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the reversionary clause would require the state government to advise council that the use is no longer going to be continuing. At that point, council would have the option to take back the ownership of the land. Now, I guess this is all speculation, but there may be reasons at that point where council may wish to negotiate a continuation of the ownership by the state government, or alternatively council may want to take back the ownership and use the asset that is now would be on our land for an alternate use. But I guess it's speculative as to what scenario may well unfold in relation to how council approaches it.
So would it return to Kingborough Council at no cost, or is the cost of infrastructure capital works required to be paid?
Mr. Smee.
The land would revert to council ownership at no cost.
What happens to the infrastructure on the site? If Kingborough Council do not want this infrastructure, who pays for the removal?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the asset that is constructed on the site would become council's asset, as it's attached to the land that we would own. I can't see a world in which council would require that asset to be demolished. If that was the desire of council to include a clause that did require demolition of the asset as part of the reversionary clause, that's something that would need to be included in the resolution tonight. But certainly in the discussions to date, the expectation under the reversionary clause is that if it was no longer to be used as a high-performance training centre for the jack jumpers, the asset would become a council asset that we would use for the community, And indeed, we all know the demand for court space, so I would envisage that two extra courts being made as part of our sports centre would be a welcome opportunity. So, as I said, I couldn't see a world in which council would require demolition.
Mm-hmm. Who is responsible for advising Kingborough Council it is no longer used for jack jumper purposes? And how long after ceasing use for jack jumpers would ownership be reversed?
Mr. Smee.
In essence, the state government, as the new owner of the land, would be required to advise council that it's no longer being used for that purpose. But in reality, you know, the Jack Jumpers are a high-profile team, and I'm sure that if they are no longer in operation, council's going to become aware of that pretty soon, and we can then act on the reversionary clause that is proposed to be included.
So what happens if they do not advise that it has been ceased for use by Jack Jumpers but used for other purposes without consent?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we would take action in accordance with the conditions of the transfer of sale and the notation that is on the title.
Are there any purposes that the site must not be used for?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, that if there were purposes that council wished to prohibit, that could form part of the land transfer agreement. There are obviously purposes under the planning scheme that are not permitted. It is zoned recreation. A high-performance training centre is a recreational use. There are a limited number of uses within the recreation zone that are permitted. Anything outside of that either becomes a discretionary or prohibited use. So they would require either a development application to council for those uses, or they're going to be straight out prohibited by the scheme.
Thank you. Thanks for answering my questions. Look, I support the recommendation. I think that the arrangement will provide tremendous benefit to the community. The freeing up of courts at the sports centre will be a huge relief to those who are currently feeling constrained. I understand pickleball is one of the fastest growing sports in our municipality, and I'm sure they'll be very excited to have more court space available to them. And I think that we'll be really proud to host the Jack Jumpers here. I know they're already training with us, but I appreciate their influence in getting people into active, healthy lifestyles, and I commend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley. I just saw Councillor Bain looking like he was trigger finger happy there for a while, but he didn't advance any further.
Right.
So, Councillor Midgley.
Had my light on. Echo the great questions from Councillor Glade right there. And again, just a few highlights on the report. The 4.7, where it mentions the location of the Jack Jumpers High Performance Training Centre brings significantly more benefits to the Kingborough community than a continuation of the existing use. And as mentioned before by Deputy Mayor Glade right, that it's freeing up space at the Kingborough Sports Centre. I've heard of many people, not being able to book spaces and things like that because we just don't have enough court spaces. And again, pickleball is just one thing. You go there, weekends, during the evenings, during the day, and it is really, really busy. And it's so great that we have this awesome facility there. And also just, the economic benefits arising from local employment and players living in the area. In regards to the things in the finance and any kind of risks there, Councillor Gladewright asked some great questions around the reversionary clause, but also for the public, the cost of constructing the facility, including any associated support infrastructure such as car parking, will be met by the state government. Council's contribution to the project will be provided to provide the land at nil consideration, with the state government owning the asset and meet all costs associated with its insurance, maintenance and operations. And I understand, if I'm correct, Mayor, that there will be rates paid as well once it's all built and going ahead. Is that correct?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, that is correct. It'll be the title will be owned by the state government and rates will be payable.
Thank you. And just checking, I'm sure that it will follow the process of submitting a DA and all that kind of thing. Correct. And in regards to, you know, the elephant in the room really around the loss of the asset that is actually there, can we just talk, can I please just have some information from staff in regards to the concerns that have been raised in the submissions, noting that we've also, you know, received a lengthy email as well from a community residents concerned around this, the process, what's happening with the club, and in regards to just conversations as far.
Yep, just before I hand over to Mr. Smee, I am aware that the staff have been actively working with the club. They've met with them and spoken to them, I believe, more than once. And they really, we have been searching for another alternative location for them. It's likely that that may be outside of Kingborough, but it's my understanding that the club members don't live in the area. In any event, they live in other suburbs and they have been coming down here since that facility was established. But Mr. Smee can provide some other points.
Thank you, Mayor. So we've looked at three alternate options for the continuation of the use by club members. So one is the existing radio-controlled facility that is in Goodwood. Now, this is too small for the particular style of remote-controlled vehicle that is used at Kingborough. However, with an expansion of that track, and there is room to expand that track, that could occur. And we've had some discussions with the Glenorchy City Council around the future of that track and the potential to for those two clubs to merge. We've also looked at an option at the My State Arena. In essence, what the club need is an asphalt area marked out as a track. Now, that could be a temporary location, a car park, for example. So the what is in existence at My State Arena could fulfil those needs, and we've looked at how that might work, and we've also been in contact with, there's a track at Orielton that, again, may be able to accommodate the club. So discussions on those three are ongoing. Certainly the amalgamation with an existing club has a lot of benefits. As the Mayor indicated, the membership of the Hobart Remote Control Car Club is very low, and when we met with them, you know, the question was asked how many of the club members are Kingborough residents, and the answer was one, possibly two. So we are dealing with a very low number of enthusiasts, but that's not to say that they're not passionate, and it's not to say that we aren't genuinely trying to come up with a solution to enable them to continue to pursue that passion.
Thank you. Thanks, Mayor. Mitchell. Thanks, Mayor. It's great to see that we are working with them because, yes, despite the low numbers for those people involved, it is something that they're passionate about, and we know that the well-being and mental health benefits about that when you are engaged in activity other than work and things. Also, just the concern raised in some submissions around the loss of revenue to the Kingborough Sports Centre, noting that I had spoken to staff regarding that the it wasn't always the Jack Jumpers were always going to be at the Kingborough Sports Centre forever and a day. It was just a temporary kind of thing that they were there, and was really grateful that they have been using that site and chose to use the facilities and pay that significant rental. But I guess then, you know, again, chatting to staff, that it does free up these spaces, frees up these court spaces. It is in high demand, and the rooms can be utilised for other things. I'm just through you, Mayor, if anyone wants to comment any further onto that.
Look, I'll just add that you're correct in that it was only ever going to be, I think, initially a two-year term. And then when it became obvious that there was no progress on the High Performance Centre at Wilkinson's Point, the Jack Jumpers extended the arrangements with us at the Kingborough Sports Centre. That's been a great bonus for, I guess, the revenue of the sports centre. But the other side is then, of course, that there have been courts that have been tied up exclusively for them during the week when there are other growth sports, has already been mentioned. But it's certainly been a great partnership, and I think if we hadn't had that to start with, then we wouldn't be looking at now securing this facility, because then the majority of the team training there has actually prompted many of them to purchase properties in Kingborough, and so they're very keen themselves to stay located in the area, and that was certainly, I believe, from the club, part of their approach to us was that the players are very happy and settled in Kingborough. They like the area, they see it as a very family-friendly area, and what they need now is their icing on the cake, so to speak, with a more appropriate level of training facility.
Thank you. And just that partnership will continue, will it, until, I guess in regards to the, leasing or renting, whatever, the Kingborough Sports Centre facility, until the facility is built. Is that correct?
Look, absolutely. And obviously there are some time imperatives here, because the matter has gone on for so long. The club are very, very keen for this to progress as quickly as possible, as we are. But so I don't know if we've got a time frame yet on when a development application might be lodged, Mr. Smee.
Mayor, the DA has already been lodged. That was lodged last week.
Right, great, fantastic. Things are moving. So that's encouraging. Councillor Fox, you did have your light on. Did you want to speak now before I get to Councillor Fox?
I'm very supportive of this, and I think it's wonderful, but I just wanted to know, Councillor Midgley's asked most of the questions, but when the mention of Goodwood, is that near Prince of Wales Bay? Because I came across one of these tracks.
That's the one.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Yep. I remember when my children were young, taking them out there with some little cars. It was fun. It was very fun. Councillor Bain and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, very supportive also. I thought it's probably worthwhile just touching on a few more of the positives that didn't come out of it. I think, as you've just mentioned, we regularly hear from Jack-Jumper players and staff doing interviews promoting how much the players love living and training in Kingborough and what a great place it is to be based. Their open training sessions are so popular up at the Sports Centre, they've had to be ticketed because they reach capacity and people come to Kingborough from all over Hobart to watch them train, so obviously come here to spend money, which is great. And then, I guess, how lucky is it that young local kids can be able to come across their sporting heroes and the reigning champions just going about their business out in the local community. It's just fantastic. And then moving forward, like it's already been said, there's additional courts going to be freed up, which is going to benefit the whole community. Further engagement with the local schools and basketball clubs. There's going to be further economic benefit with the Jack-Jumper admin and support staff shifting their working from Hobart to working in Kingborough. And then, I guess, obviously, we know the government is still working through whether the AFL High Performance Centre is going to be feasible in Clarence, and it's a big if, but if for whatever reason the government needs to revert to moving to Kingborough, that obviously be some great opportunities to share resources between the two high performance facilities. So in summary, yep, very supportive. Also, it's great to hear that we're still working with the remote control car club, because I think out of all of Kingborough, they're probably the only ones that are going to lose out of this. So if we can get a result for them as well, that's a good result all round.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor, and thanks to the staff for addressing some of the submissions and concerns from members of the community. It's no secret this council has been a big supporter of improving the use and increasing the use of our special sports precinct that has been set aside. One of the other big pluses of having the national champions have their high performance centre be based here amongst our young people is that it inspires more and more young people to get out and be active rather than wasting their lives behind TVs playing Grand Theft Auto or things like that. It's how fantastic to take your kids to a practice game or a practice and just watch the national champions play and have live entertainment ostensibly for free. It's just fantastic. We can't all get to games. It's really hard. I've been to one Jack-Jumper game that I was fortunate to get to through a friend who has a corporate box, sponsorship or subscription. And it was like it was one of the best sporting experiences of my life. And I've been to sporting events all over the world. It was so much fun. It's up there with watching AC Milan play in Milan. So I'm just excited for our local businesses. I'm excited for the local schools. I'm excited for Kingston High right there. I'm excited for the local AFL club. I'm excited for the rates for council. Thank you very much. That we'll take that. Thank you. And just to have these star players live in our midst, and you know, build their families here is just brilliant, and I just hope that more sports code follow their example and consider making Canberra their home. So all the more power to them and to us.
Thank you, Councillor Entirely. Any further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I think that ultimately this is going to be a decision which will enhance the use of the sports precinct. I wanted to clarify, I guess, because before this meeting, a former councillor pointed out to me that indeed in October of 2020, I voted against the sale of Kingborough Council's owned properties. And I was very stern at that time. I was very forthright that I didn't think that council land should be, you know, sold off or divided up. And I want to draw a very clear distinction here between this decision now and that decision then. That what we're trying to do, what I'm trying to do, is maximise community benefit. And we have in the Kingborough Sports Precinct, it's a bustling precinct. I've been participating in sport there for over 20 years. And so I feel like I know it pretty well. And there's 33 clubs there that are all doing their best to maximise community benefit and to enrich people through their sport. And it's a great thing for community cohesion, for health and well-being, for gaining lifelong friendships and for bringing people together. So currently, irrespective of whether the land is sold or leased, as we can see in Clause B there, that a revisionary clause is going to be included as part of this land transfer. And so I think it's important for community clarity that we talk about this term dispose. And my understanding of the term dispose is that it can mean both leasing or it can mean selling. I'll just pause and ask that as a question, if that could be clarified, that when we talk about this term dispose, it could mean either selling or leasing.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, that is correct, but in this instance we are talking about transferring the land by means of freehold title.
Thank you. And so to that extent, that revisionary clause, which as we've heard earlier tonight, will be as best as it can possibly be made watertight, and will also mean that if anybody goes against that clause or ignores that clause, that council would be in a position as a result of that contract of sale to be able to take what I understand to be legal action, so that there could be significant, that we would take action to make sure that that clause is maintained. So that gives me some comfort that even though we're selling this land, we're actually not losing it or breaking up the sports precinct or losing the integrity of the sports precinct. What we're doing is trying to maximise community benefit of that sports precinct. It's a shared space that's utilised by families far and wide, and the reality is that because the bulk of it is paid for by Kingborough residents, I think the bulk of the benefit should be for Kingborough residents. So I'm pleased that we are supporting the Hobart Radio Controlled Car Club. I'm pleased that we're supporting them, but I also think that this is about maximising community interest here. And as we've heard tonight, for the benefit of one or possibly two Kingborough residents, and maybe among a few dozen enthusiasts who are currently using that radio control car club on what I would say is an intermittent or non-frequent basis, I think that needs to be balanced against the community benefit that we might be able to get out of a high-performance centre. I've talked at length about how I would like for us to have an aquatic centre in Kingborough, and I always kind of hoped that the next big decision that we'd be making for the sports precinct would be about getting an aquatic facility. But nevertheless, I think that there's clear community benefit for example, the 15,000 people in Tasmania who are currently playing basketball. And so we're trying to balance that against, well, you know, what's the best use of this site? Now, I understand that it's difficult for smaller clubs like the Car Club to be able to make their case for their community benefit that some of the larger sports can. But based on the information that I've received, I think that the current use of that site is basically not frequent enough. It doesn't serve enough residents. It doesn't promote the kind of it doesn't help enough people gain the benefit that will be helped by using this site for an alternative means. So in my opinion, it's basically not really fair for one small club to dominate this prime space when there could be so much more community benefit. There's an opportunity cost of having the car club where it currently is. So the questions that come to mind are, you know, how much rent have we received from that, from the current use of that space? How many people are using that space? How many Kingborough residents get to enjoy that space? What are the various demographic breakdowns of the people who get to take advantage of that space versus having this alternative proposal, which is to have the High Performance Centre? I'm not really thinking of this in terms of economic benefit. I'm more thinking about community health and well-being. But it was raised by Councillor Midgley that, you know, having maybe 60 more people working in this area and then shopping at local businesses, there of course will be some dividend there as well. So as a council, I think it's ultimately our decision to try and maximise community benefit. And I think here is a clear example where, even though it is a difficult decision and some people won't feel that it's the right decision, I think I am comfortable in asserting that we are maximising community benefit with this decision, and we have that revisionary clause available to us if circumstances change in the future. So that's why I'll be voting in favour. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further discussion? Councillor Fox with a question.
Yes, just a quick question. If the state government is to own the land, will they be paying council rates on the value of that land?
Yes.
Because normally council doesn't pay rates.
No.
I mean, state doesn't pay council rates.
No. Mr. Smee confirmed earlier in answer to Councillor Midgley that they will be paying rates.
Could I ask how this was arranged, or why is there an... is this a precedent, or how can this be possible? Or how has it been made to be possible?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, it's certainly been our expectation in our discussions that rates would be payable. So I can't give a guarantee that they will be, but it's certainly our expectation that that would be the arrangement.
I hope we've got that in writing.
Thank you. Any further discussion? If not, just very briefly, because I think everybody has spoken very eloquently about the enthusiasm and the benefits of the centre. Certainly, I echo those thoughts. I'm very excited by the fact that we're going to have the current reigning NBL Premiership team being permanently based here in Kingborough, and I think it was Councillor Cordova who mentioned, you know, the joy that kids get when they go past their basketball heroes down at Channel Court or something. And I had a fangirl moment about last year when I went past Jack McVeigh and he was on one elevator in Channel Court and I was on the other one. And now the biggest disappointment out of all of this is he's going to go and be in the NBA, but he totally deserves it. So I appreciate the submissions that have been put forward in relation to this from members of the community. I think that I'm hopeful that we can come up with a resolution for the Model Car Club, and I really appreciate the work that the staff have done in trying to come up with some creative solutions to that, because they've been leaving no stone unturned in trying to find an alternative location so that their activities can continue. So thank you very much to everybody for their comments in relation to this. Councillor Dean, did you want to sum up? I feel like I kind of did it for you. Sorry about that. So I will put the recommendation...
Mayor, before you put it, could I just clarify one thing in relation to the lodgement of the DA?
Yes.
Department of State Growth have lodged a request for General Manager's consent to lodge the DA, and that's been granted. The DA itself has yet to be lodged.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you for that clarification. So I will put the recommendation moved by Councillor Dean and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. Being 7:23, I think we will have a brief break, because that's been we've still got a lot on the agenda, but if we could be back here in Look, I'm not going to... Look, I'm just going to go 7:35 and don't be late. How about that? That gives you 11 minutes. Thank you.